You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Podcast Network. Find all of our shows at wearelibertarians.com.
Hey, here we are. Second week of Low-Key Wall. As you guys may be wondering where Deer Leader is, he's still held up in the jungle. He hasn't recognized that I am now in charge of We Are Libertarians. I have been recognized by six of the great nine libertarian podcasts now as new Deer Leader. And he just needs to come to the fact that he needs to relinquish power. So if you see him, tell him, you know, it's over with. Just relax. And I'm here with my second in command, Reinhold.
Good evening, everybody.
And I'm also with the person who's probably going to get shot first, Escalja.
Hello.
In French, and fresh from his re-education camp, we actually got Hody in the room.
Hello, comrade.
See, you need to fix the criteria at the re-education camp. They keep coming out with fake Russian accents.
No, that's just Rocky and Bullwinkle marathon on the plane ride home. The Boris and Natasha is just so imitatable.
The Rocky and Bullwinkle marathon?
Yeah. Yeah. There wasn't a lot of choices on the plane.
They had a Rocky and Bullwinkle marathon on the plane?
Well, this is a long... the re-education camp you guys financed was not close.
That just sounds expensive. I just want to make sure we're spending the money wisely and we're not using it.
It was bootlegs.
Okay. Okay. Oof. Given we didn't spend real money on that, I'd be upset. All right. So today, here on Low-Key, I wanted to talk about a couple of things. One, as you know, it's the Edward Snowden victory lap this week. I don't know if you guys understand or remember that it's been, 6 years since Edward Snowden dropped the massive bombshell, and nobody cares.
Some people care, but
nobody cares. People are still on Facebook. People aren't using encryption. They don't care. They're fine with the spying now. They're fine. They're totally fine. You know, matter of fact, they're going to use the spying attempt to go after their political enemies that they don't like.
We all knew that was going to happen. They were doing that in the 50s, 60s.
True, true, true. We knew that was going to happen.
JFK,
but it's still
big with that.
Yeah, but now you're sitting there and you're having to sit there and watch it happen. It's just kind of disgusting.
You've always been so good about privacy, and I guess I'll admit, maybe I'm the person that just needs to care more, because I think for me, and I don't use this as an excuse to breach anybody else's privacy, but for me, I'm not doing anything. So have fun, you know?
It's not for you then. It's not for you. The privacy and all that stuff is not for you. It's the people that need it. There are people whose well-beings and the jobs that they do that they need to retain it instead of privacy or anonymity, you know, or that they are getting ready to be a whistleblower on a dark or terrible project that's happening.
Yeah.
They're the ones that need it.
100%.
That was a big deal with Facebook requiring real names, was that there's a lot of people who needed to be a sort of anonymous so that they could get their message out and communicate behind the scenes in areas that would have hunted them down and killed them. Right. So they made some allowances for some people to have non-fake names, but for the most part, you're supposed to use real ones.
Correct. A real name. Yeah.
That was where I felt that Facebook acted biased in that regard, was because they would allow what they wouldn't allow somebody recording, behind the scenes police footage of them altering evidence, unless it was under a real name, to be aired. But they would allow Tina from Bob's Burgers. They'll let that happen as long as they're posting left wing stuff. Then it's fine. It was just wait. So the time when they need it, you won't let them have the privacy. But if they just want to post left wing stuff, then they can post it whatever they want.
But you can post articles that refer to unnamed sources all day long. That's okay.
Yeah, and that's the majority of what people do. I mean, that's what I do.
Yeah, but and that's what I'm saying, and that is what is needed for the anonymity. Because if you're only anonymous when you need to be anonymous, you kind of show everybody who is doing something.
Yeah,
it is that when somebody. So basically, like a lot of bad ops, like a lot of people see people on that use Tor, and how they get caught is because they just started using Tor instead of just using it all the time. And that's how they get caught. They download the Tor browser and they use it, and then something happens or something gets leaked. So it's like, ha, it's that computer, that terminal right there, and that's how they get found out. Majority of the time.
Thankfully, it's so user unfriendly. I have no idea how to use Tor. I'm sure I would be in jail by now if I could figure it out.
It is actually very user friendly. The main problem is most people just forget to turn it on. It's just a standard operating procedure. It's if you
is that where I'm going wrong?
Yeah, and the best thing a lot of people mess up with their OPSEC is they feel like they're too good or they got too complacent with it and they don't use a checklist. All right, turn it on. Check that you got it turned on. Hey, Vincent Cooper. Hey, Wickedkinder. And that's where a lot of people mess up in their OPSEC. They think like, well, I have this, so I don't need to, you know, I don't have to worry. But it's everyone using encryption, being anonymous. You do that to protect everyone that when they need it. So that journalist that's out there hiding that, like just exposing something, or a government employee that's whistleblowing on a terrible project like collateral murder, they got to be able to release that out there without being able to be found out, because they'll suffer the consequences. Just like Chelsea Manning, she suffered the consequences for years sitting in prison. And the only reason she out is because Obama, not pardoned. What did he do? Not expunged.
Commuted.
Commuted, thank you. Commuted her sentence. Other than that, she'd still be rotting in that hole over there, okay? And that's why I'm a huge privacy advocate, as giving people to, because a lot of this stuff should be commonplace, so, and people should just use it, so, you know, they...
It should be built into the operating systems that people can talk to VPNs a lot easier than they can, right? So you can go and sign up to NordVPN, you know, pay, $5-$10 a month or whatever, and it's put on your phone, and it's automatic, and everything's encrypted. It goes out in and out of the data side of your phone, but it still doesn't stop the tracking of the phone calls and the texts and stuff that happen, right? So, I mean, that was one of the great things about WikiLeaks, was that we had a place where people could anonymously send the information they want whistleblown. And it would get out there, and it was heralded as a great thing by the left when they were doing it against Bush. But the minute they used it against Obama or Hillary, then it's the Russian front.
It's like the truth doesn't have a political party or something.
Uh-oh. All right. Everyone says Reinhold's coming through really low. Hold on. Let's see if I can get that on the mixture board.
Am I coming in low now?
They say you're coming in low. All right. Let's just say some more bars for me, Reinhold, real quick. Sorry about this. Teaching hospice. Working hospice.
Can you hear me better now?
Huh. I can hear you fine.
I've been able to hear you fine the whole time.
Yeah, I've been able to hear you fine. I don't know quite what seems to be going on the other end. That's very odd.
But he says he can hear me fine. That's weird.
We just reversed roles from last week.
All right. Sorry. Where were we?
Well, you're good. So, I love doing this. Let's play devil's advocate, though. How do you stop then somebody from slandering somebody anonymously, making up a bunch of stupid stuff? I mean, that's been happening for, you know, since at least our country's history, and probably since world history, making up a story, getting it anonymously published and throwing it out there and getting it published. And the guy's like, hey, I'm not responsible for the story. Some anonymous guy told me that George Bush's dad is a lizard person.
Well, journalism used to have some rules. where they had to follow. But lately, they've been ignoring those rules. It used to be that you had to have independent confirmation on a story. You had to have somebody who would go public on it, and you use the unnamed source to get somebody else to respond to it, to get them on the record for it. It was never really meant to be just anonymous sources, right? So you, even with Deep Throat and Watergate, they, you know, Bradley wouldn't let them publish anything without other sources and other independent verification of that story. They couldn't just run with what Deep Throat was telling them, what Mark Felt was telling them. So lately, correct, it just seems like those practices have just been thrown out the window because everybody's trying to earn the buck, mm-hmm, and get to be the first to the story and not do the due diligence on it because we have a much shorter news cycle than we used to have.
Right. Everyone wants to come out first. No one's waiting for collaborate the sources. So just like Collateral Murder, they took it and they went there and they tried to figure out, okay, well, they got this anonymously, and now everyone's trying to verify, like, hey, is this true? They went through different handles, look at the pictures, looked at the military reports, like, okay, and verified, like, okay, this thing is real, or as real as we can tell, you know. And then they put generals on basically, it was like, hey, what's your information on this? Oh, we can't, you know, and that's how the story developed. Now, from trying to stop someone going, saying something anonymous on the net and posting like slanderous material, that's just, you know, for a quick, dirty answers, like, that's the price, freedom. Sorry for the quick, dirty answer. I could probably come up with a better one if given time.
Well, there's people who are trying. So there's lawsuits against the CNN and Washington Post and all that stuff about what happened with the kids with the MAGA hats. And it's just like, they weren't maliciously trying to destroy those kids. They were reporting on a video that was, you know, gone viral. So they're reporting on, mm-hmm, this viral video and letting people see what they saw on the video, and people are making up their own minds on it, and people were giving their opinions on it, on the opinion side of the news stories. Mm-hmm. Then other information came out and it changed the narrative a little bit. And how, I don't know how you can go after those sources for just reporting on what was presented to them as saying that they were doing something malicious. But that's what people are wanting to do now. They're wanting to stamp down on anybody saying anything bad about the people who they feel are on their side or they feel have been wronged or whatever. So you have to have some free speech. If you're going to believe in free speech, you have to believe in free speech for everybody, you know.
I don't give them that amount of leniency. I wouldn't sue them for slander. I would just stop paying attention to anything they have to say. I did have a beef with it in the sense that, I mean, heck, we had Tad telling us in chat that the story was baloney 10 minutes after BuzzFeed released it, you know?
It was hours and hours after. He didn't say anything until like almost midnight that night when the first alternative news sources were starting to report that there might be an alternative story to it.
Right? Well, so, I mean, we had multiple angles of the video accessible very quickly afterwards. I mean, I guess I can say that Tad, it seemed quick to me after I had heard the Buzz story that he was on it, and the fact that they were reporting still a week afterwards by saying, look at how the right has tried to frame our story. Look at how the right has tried to, I mean, CNN didn't, they retracted it 2 weeks afterwards. I mean, it took them forever. I mean, it was bad. It was bad. I wouldn't sue them or, you know, lawsuit them. It was bad. However, Harry, I don't think that your answer was bad, because I think the thing is that is the price, and that's personal accountability. For me, I will never listen to anything the Washington Post says at their word ever again. They did this to themselves when they made up a bunch of lies about Trump and they published them. And somebody revealed this by saying, if I put these stories side by side, that either these 33 stories are wrong or these 45 stories are wrong, based on this bit of information that we found out, right? And so they kept it all anonymous, but that doesn't mean you end up not disproving yourself. Just because you hide behind anonymity and you make up a bunch of lies, whether they did or not, maybe they believed every single, let's just say it was 100 different Reddit scammers that they listened to and just were like, hey, let's make a story out of it, you know. But they've been totally discredited. Everybody knows now, you listen to Washington Post, you're a moron, you know. People know if you say, hey, I got this from CNN, you're a dipstick, you know. And so for me, that is the price then that you pay. It's, you might get away with it sometimes, but you're not going to get away with it every time. And if you make up enough lies and slander, eventually someone can prove it wrong. I thought it was interesting. We're listening to Liberty's First Crisis right now in the book club. And this was a price a lot of these guys, these early journalists paid, was they thought they could make up some stories. Some politicians like, actually, that didn't happen. And in fact, I have the letter from her right here that says exactly what actually did happen. And they would publish it, and that journalist would get smashed in the teeth because he published a lie. Now, a lot of times they just say, we make some educated guesses and we get them wrong from time to time. And so I think it encourages a society that says, hey, we need to not pay attention to you anymore. You know, we need to not give you as much leniency as we've been giving you anymore. We've been trusting you on these anonymous sources. Now that we know you don't investigate them or you downright lie about it, I'm out. And it's tough because we live in a sheeple land. And so I think people are, I'll let you go, but I think people are willing to believe more and let it get away with it. I think instead of encouraging the media to be more responsible, I think we need to encourage media listeners to be more responsible for their media the other way around.
Well, that's the big deal, is that so many people are just going to sources that, you know, validate their own biases. They're not looking at whether or not what they're saying is true or what they're saying is false, or is the clickbait headline really backed up by the article, and are you running with what clickbait because you didn't even read the article, you just saw the headline and went with it. You know, there's a lot of that stuff and echo chambering going on these days, and no one's being told that they're not wrong to do that, you know. So that's where the issue really lies in there, is that we can say we want to demand better from the news sources, but if that were the case for the majority of people, they would be demanding more news sources and it would be happening. Instead, we're getting people who would rather know about Gaga Cooper or the Housewives of Atlanta, or, you know, there's so many other stories that they'd rather hear about. They don't care. They just want their biases filled.
Yeah. Right?
And bolstered.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm with you.
Okay. Just want to say hi to Toboder Us. Are us. But the thing is, like, one thing with CNN and a lot of those guys is that they've been fake news for a long time. A long time.
Well, I mean,
it wasn't even like a lot of the stuff they were reporting on. It was just some of the stuff that was just slanted. Like, it was it was just offbeat to it. And some stuff was just so blatant, it was almost comical.
Well, it's been that way for decades. But it was never, I don't think it was ever as bad as it is now. I think now it's gotten a lot worse. But it was always bad, and everybody had their own biases, but that's been true for centuries. It's right. So this whole idea of journalism being unbiased is really a new invention from the 20th century for a period of a few decades. And then it just reverted back to what we're normal with. You know, we used to have the Richmond Republican or the, you know, Greenville Democrat or whatever. They in their titles would admit what their biases were.
Right.
And you could go read stories from the time, and you can see, like, there's a documentary I looked at on the, on Tombstone, and you can look at the two different newspapers, and the one was Republican backed, the one was Democrat backed. And that's what that was really a Republican Democrat thing anyway. And when you go look at it, the stories in those two newspapers are so different because of the way the reporting was done. It's like two different situations happened, but they're all talking about the same event.
You know, accountability in media, I just think, is something that is just always going to be up to, you're better off it bad media getting out there and the public determining it than trying to get the government to force it in there.
You're going to end up with them wanting to say, you have to be a journalist. You need a license to do so. You need to be identified as a reporter. You need to be, approved before your voice can be put out there as an opinion, as opposed to just spouting off on a blog and then having to, be silenced. So,
oi, mate, you got a license for that opinion?
I mean, that's what's going to happen. That's what people are trying to push. They were trying with the fairness doctrine decades ago. You know, they've been wanting this because people want their message to be out there and the opposing message to be silenced. And that's whoever's in power is trying to push it the other way back and forth every time.
No, totally true. And it's been that way for forever. I think you did well by saying centuries. Again, with the book that I'm reading, that there is this Benjamin Franklin Bache who is very anti-federalist, would just post stuff and say, you know, hey, Washington's been having all these affairs. All the women involved denied it. And in fact, many of them had never been in the same state with him at the same time and were able to prove it. And so they'd go to him and they'd be like, why? And he'd be like, eh, that's the way I lean. Like, that's just, you know, the bias you're getting. So really, like, it's not one of those problems. And this is in, I mean, what, 1790? I mean, this has been a problem for centuries. It's not one of this modern, oh, because we have social media or because we have this or that, it gets around. Bad media has been a thing for forever. By the way, the National Association of Broadcasters is on the top 20 lobbyists. Let's see here, $229 million last year paid to politicians. I just looked it up. So yeah, paid out to politicians to try and, again, what you said, get licensed so that people like, frankly, us are quieter. You know,
correct, and that's the other reason why, like, the FCC was a pile of gigantic dicks, is because they restricted a lot of the ways news outlets back in the day used to make money was controlling print, radio, and broadcasting. So the FCC would control which frequencies you could use and would rent those out, so you could stop certain messages from getting out. Just because, hey, they can't talk to anyone. The power of the internet has allowed many different quote unquote news organization. Opinion piece people out there to take news, digest it down, and give like nuanced talk to it, or just to break things down. So most people will go through an article, like look at it, rip the bio, you know, be able to rip the bias out, or just be able to see a, you know, a mass of different news articles to go like, okay, I can look at 45 news articles of the exact same story and be able to somewhat get a truth. And in the past, you couldn't do that because you had what, four channels. Probably like three or five radio channels to listen to, and they're all probably saying around the exact same thing, depending on what bias you have and control, and you were placed in that box, you know, a government box of information.
Yeah, before cable, it was, you know, ABC, CBS, NBC, and that was it. And they all would pretty much say the same things and report on the same stories in the same way. It was not a lot of variation.
I almost feel like there is cycles in that regard. Like, we go from the National Enquirer being like a fringe paper to being like the main event. I guess I feel like right now we're in a swing, and maybe it is because social media a little bit, that things like are crazy. But I mean, we got to remember Dan Rather in this environment would not have been fired for what he got fired for at the time he got fired. You know, he made up a story about George W. Bush. He would be the number one anchor on CNN right now had he not done that.
And he didn't. CBS didn't make the story up. He just ran with what he thought he was told.
Sure. Well, and all, and I mean, his guys warned him, hey, maybe you shouldn't do it. And he was like, no, let's do this. We got to be early on it. And then it ended up not being true. So, I mean, there's some, how accountable is he for saying, we want to get, you know, if this story seems credible, let's put it forward. Oh, oops. Oops, you know, it ended up not being credible, but I went with it like it was my bad. You know, I think in this environment, we would take a my bad from an anchor and not even think twice about it. You know, we'd just be like, oh, well, he admitted he messed up. I mean, heck, BuzzFeed originated the MAGA hat kid. And they're like, yep, we screwed that up about as hard as we can screw it up. And people are still watching, you know, people still watch BuzzFeed, you know. So I think it cycles a little bit. We're just in a cycle of kind of being cooler about letting people lie right now, and eventually I guess eventually we'll be sick of it, but we'll see.
Well, and you got to understand too, just because a news media has a bad story or they get something wrong and they fail to follow their own journalistic principles in order to rush a story, everybody's kind of under that pressure these days. It doesn't mean that everything that they report is bad, and that's, I think, the mindset people are starting to get into, is to say, okay, anything coming out of this source is, you know, completely bad and we won't listen to it. It's like, okay, take what they said, go look it up for yourself, find out if you believe it or agree with it. Does it fit with what you think reality is? You know, do your own checking on it. don't just dismiss it out of hand either, right? So, I mean, there's some stories that'll come out that I might roll my eyes to because I'm like, well, I understand where the bias is here, and I doubt that this is this way. And you go look it up, and you find out for sure they're pushing the envelope. They're fudging the story to get their view out. But then you've got places that are like there's some stuff that was out during the Bush years that was so bad as a journalistic source that it's almost satire. It's completely based in nothing. And you have to try to, take those and say, okay, those I'm not going to listen to. But for the most part, most people are trying to put the story out as right as they can.
Yeah. Well, I got tired of quoting. For me, it was the first one to fall for me was Fox News. Like a lot of people, I got sick of quoting them thinking I was quoting a legitimate story. Mm-hmm. And it ended up not being true or being severely biased or very selective with facts, I guess we'll say. And I just was like, I need to stop quoting them because I will look stupid when it happens. I think if it doesn't pan out that way. So I think, I don't know, it's hard because I don't want to dismiss everything. And even I will still use, I think you have to go like reporter, journalist by journalist or reporter by reporter almost. Mm-hmm. But I wish that I knew more of the reporters individually. For me, it's easy. Like you said, it's easy for me to blanket BuzzFeed as just being fake now, you know, because yes. One guy chose to do a really bad story on something that he knew better than to do and spin it his way. And it's probably one person. It's not every single person at BuzzFeed. Most of them probably lean that way, but they aren't liars. One guy is a scumbag, not all of them. But it's hard because now anytime I say, oh, look what BuzzFeed released, I'm going to take a deep breath and be like, is it true though? You know? So I don't know. I think because I don't know enough about the reporters, we don't have journalists on Weird Libertarian. It sucks, but we don't send a guy out there. You know, I don't have a reporter who saw it. So I have to trust the news. So when the news lies, it really pisses me off. Like it's one of the most egregious things for me because I have to report. They are my reporters and I'm the interpreter. And so when they report something bad, it makes me look bad and it really makes me mad.
And there are places out there that do follow the reporters around and show you whether this reporter has also been involved in other stories and things like that. No Agenda does a really good job of that. Where they will,
do they?
Yeah, they will follow and say, okay, this is the guy who said the story about this years ago. This is what he does here. And this is, you know, that's like, there's a guy who was fired from, I think it was Washington Post, for making up running with the story about Roger Stone before the facts came out that it was false, and he got fired for it. And then he turned around 6 months later and was hired as the news director at MSNBC or something like that. I can't remember exactly where it was, but it was one of those news organizations. Now he's the director there. And it's like, you guys didn't learn anything. you're just recycling this guy who it was a problem before for someone else. Right. So,
right.
I think I remember that story because I think Washington Post even threw him under the bus by saying, hey, of our, what it was like 83 anonymous sources in the last month, 53 of them came from this guy and we're letting him go. So, I understand the anonymous source thing got out of control, but it's mm-hmm. mostly him, you know?
Yeah. And you're right. Like when you said like Fox News let you down, I remember when CNN let me down. You know, like watching, like having news come in and or selectively added, you know, like they selectively picked facts. I think one of my favorite one or the Indy Star. Like to me, I liked print media. For me, I always thought that if someone took the time and effort, especially in this day and age, to put pen to paper or printing paper, right? This had to be research. This took a while, so you might as well make sure this is the best thing that you could put together. Even that gets wrong sometimes. Indianapolis, I think the Indy Star, when Indy Star did that whole food desert thing in Indianapolis, and then it stinks when you watch a news organization that you did trust, you watch them do that, but all that does is, one, should reaffirm that you are reading this article with a critical mind, and you're critical thinking as you're reading this article, so that you can pick up these things. Yeah. So at first you can be pissed off, but it's like, okay, at least I know I'm actively reading this thing, not just glossing it over and just reading a headline.
Yeah. I just need to do a better job. Maybe Reinhold, I guess I got to get with you afterwards and find that list and talk about journalists that we can trust. Because I remember once, it was actually CNN, when Obama tried to kick the Fox reporter out of the conference, and the CNN guy stood up and was like, "You kick him out, I'm leaving too." Like, yeah. And they took it all back and they said, no, never mind, everybody can stay. But I remember being like, I had like so much respect for CNN after that. And then it was all gone. But I think that's because it's not CNN. It's not Fox News. It's this guy. It's that guy. And I guess I need to identify who those good journalists are again. I have no idea now.
Well, I think the best journalism I've been finding is on The Intercept. And even then, they get a few things wrong here and there. But for the most part, they source everything and do a really good job of finding out the details. And I usually kind of start there first on any type of, you know, if I read something in somewhere and I go look at The Intercept and they've got a wholly different, you know, take on it, then I can go, okay, let me look and see and start putting things together. But I learned a long time ago to do that. I mean, I used to write for Watchblog, and the whole point of Watchblog was to have Democrats, Republicans, and independent libertarians all on the front page together in three separate columns. So when you went to the page, you saw stories from all three mindsets, and it was us writing, it was opinions, but it was still us writing these articles. And you would see an event happen and you would see the left's version of it, the right's version of it, and the libertarians' version of it all on the same page. And then you could start seeing the differences. And that's when that's when you start noticing that. And then Real Clear Politics does that, where you go to their page and you'll go down the list of the op-eds and it's like, here's a left source, here's a right source, here's a left source, here's a right source, you know, and it's they're all saying like, this is a good thing that this has happened, and this is the most horrible thing that happened, and they're talking about the same thing. So you can get both mindsets, and you start reading them and putting together your own opinion based off of each side's presentation of the story.
Yeah. Well, I think people push for unbiased, and I think I don't know that that's achievable, because I think if it's just stats, I mean, there would be no news story. It's not a story. It would just be, here's a video clip or here's a statistic and that's it. And so I like the concept of saying, here's three people, all admit their biases, all see the world in a different way, and here's how they see that world. Harry, what you said about written stuff, and I think that if somebody will sign their name on it, it's much more valuable than somebody just saying it. If you guys listen to Boss Hog of Liberty, a few weeks ago they had Travis Wyke on the program, and he was he's the editor of the Courier Times, and talks about how he keeps his newspaper alive in this digital media era. And a lot of it is because anything he knows he puts in the newspaper, yes, he has to wait one day and he has to print it. But if it's gotten to the point where he's printing it, it's fact. And that's kind of how he keeps it alive, because everybody can use his paper 100 years from now and say, I know this happened. Mm-hmm. And that's how he stays alive. So I think there is something to be said for written. If somebody's willing to put their name on it, it's much more valuable than somebody tweeting about it, I guess.
Well, and it used to be that when we did have just the three major news sources out there, the ABC, CBS, NBC, they would basically come on for half an hour, report the basic facts of what happened. And that was it. They let people decide on their own what it meant. And then over the years, it's morphed back into, here's, you know, why you should care about this. And this is the extenuating circumstances on why this matters this way and that way. And they started putting spins on all the stories. Mm-hmm. Right. But there was a period of time where it was really just Walter Cronkite just trying to state the facts as he saw them, or as the reporters saw them on the field, right? So that was a very short golden age, I think, for that unbiased journalism. Because before that, you had the gossip reporters and Hedda, you know, and all those people back in the 20s and 30s who would destroy careers. You know, what they did to Fatty Arbuckle and Charlie Chaplin was horrible. But, you know, it just seemed like there was a shift for a period of time, and then it just went away. And people started realizing they could propagandize their views. And the fact that the government can now legally propagandize to us, which they couldn't do until a few years ago, while Obama was in office, he passed that change. Mm-hmm. So now you have these propaganda arms like Voice of America, who could only operate outside the United States because propaganda was not allowed to be used on U.S. citizens. Well, that's not illegal anymore. So now they can start feeding that stuff right back into us, and it's getting into our news shows. If you don't think that there aren't intelligence agency people working at all of the major news sources right now, you're naive as all get out.
Okay. All right. It's Skulls, you've been quiet. Did you want to say something before I move? Skulls, you? We can only assume he's been attacked by ninjas. So rest in peace, Skulls. Press F for Skulls, everyone. But yeah,
he's on mute right now. I don't know if he may, okay. if he knows it or not.
But it's okay. Press F for Skulls.
All right, F.
And to me, that's always like what newspapers were. They were like these written facts. They were like daily books, basically, written the history of the world. Like, this is the history, and this is what happened on that day. And then you're right, like a lot of different opinion pieces. Of course, we could be looking at the past completely wrong. There's only a few stories like that we are remembering, and it was all just opinion piece crap, and it has always been crap, possibly.
Well, I think the time we were growing up, like in the 70s and 80s, it was a much different time.
I'm going to stop you there, Reinhold. When you were growing up.
I grew up in the 60s and 70s. So I was trying to give you a little bit of benefit of the doubt there. But yeah, during that time, I think it was a lot more, the written paper was trying to be more fact-based, right? And then like I said, you remember back in the Civil War era, Tombstone, early 1900s, mm-hmm. It was not like that. It was very slanted. You could see the slants in the news articles when you go back and read them. So I think that, like I said, we just kind of grew up in a golden age where we got spoiled. Mm-hmm. With print media being trying to be more than what they were and then giving up on it as the money started going away because of the internet.
Okay. Couple things. Take Reinhold out of context. He just said he remembered the Civil War. So remember, next time Reinhold says how old he is, he remembers the Civil War. The other thing we need to know is, Reinhold, can you briefly, just very briefly, talk about Charlie Chaplin? What do you mean that the media? I don't know about. Sorry. Only thing I know about Charles Chaplin is just some of the comedy videos that I've seen. So what did the media say about it?
Well, partially the media, partially the burgeoning FBI or with what's his name? I can't remember his name for some reason. The guy who was in charge of the FBI for so long. But he was just getting started. Yeah, used to wear women's clothes. That was the old saying. So what happened was that he was
J. Edgar Hoover.
J. Edgar Hoover. That's it. Yeah. So he was just getting started in the Bureau at this time. And so there was a concern about people being socialists or communists at the time. And Charlie Chaplin had said some things that he said he felt for Russia because Russia gave up so much during World War II, you know, to help save everybody. And things like that were said, how he felt that we should owe them that. And it was taken to say, oh, he's all for communism now. And he's like, no, that's not what I said. But they just started twisting the things he was saying. So where it got into the FBI, where they were looking for a reason to kick him out of the country. And on top of that, he had some issues with some women who were, you know, of younger age, as it were. But he got accused of being somebody's father who he had never slept with. And the courts were clear that he had nothing to do with it, but they still, mm-hmm. because of the pressure and the media attention at the time, he was ruined and made to pay support for that child.
Oh, wow.
For 18 years, whatever. So, and then when he went to go back to England on a trip, his passport was pulled the day after, and he wasn't allowed to come back in the country.
Somewhat similar with Fatty Arbuckle too. That was just a crucifixion in the media.
Yeah, Fatty Arbuckle was accused of killing a girl at a party that he didn't know was nowhere near around. But the sensationalization of the story was so big that he was found guilty, and yep. and his career was over.
Oh no!
Did he find him innocent?
I thought he hung.
Yeah.
After two trials of hung juries.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
On the third, they finally found him innocent. But his at that point, everybody. Ruined,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and at the time, and it's funny, is people, you know, Fatty Arbuckle, I think, is pretty much dead to history for most people. At the time they got him, he was by far the number one paid actor. And
well, him and Charlie Chaplin were both, and they appeared together in some movies early on. So it was kind of neat to see. I watched some old documentaries recently, and I was watching them two together trying to outdo each other in a scene. You could tell they were ad-libbing the whole thing, and they were just trying to one-up each other, and it was hilarious to watch. But, I think him and Charlie were both like the number one, number two, back and forth for a long time.
Yeah. He was making $1 million in 1920 a year. So that's something to think about, right? Yeah. I mean, that's Babe Ruth was looking up to him. That's a big cash. So yeah,
Charlie Chaplin was a really interesting story too, that he had made all that money and he had women chasing down, like he was trying to put together the movie The Kid, and he was going through a divorce, and her lawyers were trying to tell her that she could take the movie from him. So he went on the road out of state and started hiding in hotels to put the movie together, so that he could keep her from getting a hold of it. He ended up being able to keep it, and she agreed to something else. But he made all this money, and then he pulled everything out of the stock market a year before it crashed.
Good move. Good move.
It's, yeah. 1920s actors, you knew Loki Wall was going to get hot.
Oh, I need to know.
This is the
Immortal Birds.
We're topical, baby.
Yeah. Of Kanye West is holler. We want prenup. We want prenup. Dang, he's going to take his movie. That's cold. That's just mean. That's just vindictive.
It was scary. He was funny because every documentary about him will talk about that period of time where he's editing the film, lugging around crates of reels from hotel to hotel, trying to keep ahead of the private agents trying to find him. Sorry. And then he spent like 2 years making what I argue is the most romantic movie ever made, City Lights. So
that's the most romantic movie to you?
It is. And it's the most romantic. A lot of people will remark that it's probably the most and first romantic comedy, period. I can't watch the end of that movie without crying. I don't know anybody can or how they could.
Oh, wow.
I cry over dog food commercials, so I mean, I'm probably not a good candidate to try and
you should watch
challenge myself
then.
There.
It's the last silent movie that Charlie Chaplin did, because it was talkies were already out at the time, and he refused to do talkies with the Tramp. But it's a masterpiece, and the fact that he took so long to make it work right is a testament. He was paying his people. That's the other thing too, is that all the people who were ever on his payroll got paid whether he was working or not. He still paid them weekly anyway, because they were all loyal to him.
Oh, wow. That's a good guy.
Didn't Jackie Chan have like a stunt group? And he
still does.
They all made the same amount of money. Something crazy.
Yeah. He was part of a group. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He still does, has his own group. He was part of a like that. And that's just how that whole like culture that they had out there. And it's another reason why Jackie Chan still does tons of movies, but he does them over in China, because of the control and that the group that's able to do things. Having Jackie Chan talk about the way he does movies over there, it makes you know, it's no wonder a lot of American fight scenes are just such garbage, or movies are such garbage, because they're just so like, quick, do this quick. Just screw it. Do it. See, just keep moving. Well, Jackie Chan just sat there like, all right, we're going to spend, they spent eight apps. Like, if you watch the Netflix movie Kung Fu Yoga, there's a scene when they're flipping around a briefcase. It looks like it was seamless, one take, and they did it really quick. That was a day.
Well, it's an art, right? I mean, isn't that what we originally paid for? Art.
Yeah. Yeah. It was art. Yeah. And it was like, and like, you watch the movie, then you watch the document, and they're talking about it. It's like, it's, you have to watch it again. Like, I can't believe they spent a day on this one scene, but you almost appreciate the movie even more.
That's like, like with Charlie Chaplin, he was having problems in City Lights. If you've seen the movie or you're going to see the movie, there's a scene at the very beginning that hinges on a blind girl thinking that he's rich, and he couldn't for the life of him figure out how he was going to make her convinced that he was rich. Right. Mm-hmm. And he spent a year just baffled over trying to figure this out. He'd take after take after take, just working it through. Then one day he was in his office and he heard a door slam, and he's like, oh, that's it. Getting out of the car, slammed the door, you know, that made it work. And it, if that didn't work, the movie doesn't work. So he was dedicated to finding that. And the girl who was playing the blind girl, so she spent months just sitting in her dressing room reading books because she had nothing to do, but she was still getting paid. That's how much the art meant to him. He financed all of his movies himself too.
Wow. That's,
he never borrowed.
I'm kind of glad I actually, I'm really glad I, you know, poked this lead that was buried and uncovered all of this about Fatty Arbuckle. So I'm sure, I really hope a lot of you guys go and look it up. Hopefully, anyways. Just remember, get that prenup.
This is from the autobiography of Jeff Bezos, Things That You Need to Learn from Me. The cover.
Section on how to take a pic.
Yeah.
No matter what. Well, okay, no, it's kind of different for Bezos, though, because she was there. She was working for him, though. She
got the startup money from her parents, right?
Right, yeah, yeah. Yeah. You know, she, you know, that's a completely different story. Yeah. You know,
Oh, yeah, I'm just taking a cheap shot joke.
I know, and I feel bad because then I kind of like just walk through the joke.
And that's really part of the problem is that you have the situation where you have women who are just after a guy's money, and then you have women who legitimately gave up everything that they could have been and wanted to be in order to support her man to go do this thing, and then he gets tired of her and moves on. You know, she deserves something. So then you have to go on an individual basis and say, okay, is this not, you know, you can't make a blanket ruling and say, you know, all women get half every time. You have to, you really kind of have to do it case by case.
If you want to see how in any unequal the government applies justice, look how far they will go to trace petrodollars and try to get justice for those. And then look at how little effort they will spend on domestic dollars and trying to say whose was whose. They're just like, I don't care. And they just don't care.
But there's, hold on. I don't know if you ever seen the little blog post called The Unknown History of Misandry. It is a great, how can I put it? It is a different look at history inside the United States. Of just some of the, it just kind of like just turns, it's just different part of it, like just unknown talk, the way people talk about different things. And it'll adjust you a little bit. It's weird. It is different. I will drop it in the low key wall chat for anyone who wants to check it out on the Discord. It's different. I recommend the read. I'm not going to pull any of it up right now because a lot of people's, how can I put it? There's sources and categories and stuff you can research on it. It is just, it's, oh, wow. It just shows the, when, to me, it just gives a different like aspect because when people talk about like how awful men can be, well, you know what? Humans are awful creatures. A lot of people screw people over, just like any guy will screw over like their wife who get up their best year for them and help support them, got them to med school and leaves them for like just a secretary. That's awful and crappy. But that's another thing, and also understanding that relationships can ebb and flow into different things and different parts of attraction. Different things are just lying in communication with each other.
You want to know about the some of the really sick things people can do. There's a song by Jonathan Colton.
I love Joko.
Called Gonna Make You Cry. And it's, oh, he even said that after he got done recording it, he was sick to his stomach for recording it. And it's about this guy who's in love with a girl, but she doesn't like him back, you know, but she's friends with him. So he's going to spend all of his time to try to win her love with the sole purpose of when he does, when he finally breaks her and she falls in love with him, he's going to make her cry and treat her like dirt and put, you know, dump her and everything else just to get even.
That's awful. That's awful.
It's just like, there's people like that, though. There's crazy people out there.
Yep. All right. And
it's hard to talk about gender issues without, like, taken aside or like starting or seeing it as sides, I guess, like, because it just becomes so, I think it's hard to not feel personally attacked on one way or another, and so it becomes, I think, see, for me it's been a journey to even where I'm at right now, and even then I don't know that I do it right, because my brother, who's very keen on these issues, will be like, hey, by the way, when you talk about women like this, discuss it like this and not like what you did on the show. And I'm like, oh, okay, I'm sorry, I didn't think about it.
Well, it takes time sometimes to see things from another person's point of view, too. So when one thing that really stuck out with me a long time ago is I was just starting to date my current wife, and she had had a wreck. So she took her car in to get worked on, and she went in to ask them some questions about it. And she would ask the guy the question. The guy would then turn to me and answer.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm just,
I see that. Dude, yeah. Working in restaurants, I see that all the time. Like, let me tell you what she wants. Or she'll start to order and he'll be like, she wants the number three. And I'm just like,
well, my wife wouldn't prefer me to order for her. She tells me what she wants.
That's and I do fine. Order,
but I wouldn't do it
without
her, you know, asking me to do it. You know what I'm saying?
Or stop her.
Yeah.
Like that. Yeah. It gets crazy. But well, you talk about relating. I think it's hard because I think it's hard to not feel attacked. I know for me, a term that I used to use all the time was the nice guys finish last thing. And it's because, well, now hold on, hear me out here. It's because I was in college and I was trying to date. And I guess I was some kind of incel or whatever, and nobody liked me. And I'll admit it. You know what I mean? Like, I was looking for like a relationship, and everybody else is looking for a good time and not really a relationship. And I would go and I would try. I'd try at bars. I'd try at my Bible study. I would try. I just try, you know, and I'm working on finding, you know, I worked on finding that connection, you know, and ultimately somebody that I cared about, like a friend. I'm not just like trying to date anybody, you know. I would be like, oh, this person, we have a lot in common. Let's see if something could happen here. Would end up banging some rando in the bathroom and then crying about it the next day later, and I'm there picking up the pieces. And that's what I meant by it. Okay. You know, and she never owed me sex. Like I feel like that's how it always comes off.
It does.
But I just but
that was my first assumption. I will be truthful. That was my assumption.
No, but and I understand why, because that's whenever you see it, whenever people take the screenshots, it's some beta whatever trying to guilt some girl and being like, you know, give me nudes. No, nice guys finish last. And it's like, what? How I used it was always, here I am, like, I've got my life together. I am a homeowner. I'm trying to like do all these things, and I know this is like kind of Great Gatsby. Like, I know you can't earn somebody's love. I get it. Right. I get that. And they have the right to bang whoever they want in anybody's car, in anybody's bathroom. It doesn't matter. It's not, I should not be mad, but I still feel like I should be able to talk about that experience and have some verbiage to talk about the experience of people like me, because the people like me, my experience was not unique. There is a whole group of incels, right? Well, now, not all of them are disgusting, awful, evil, you know, naggy, whatever people. A lot of them cared about a girl and are sick of watching the girl bang randos and then pick up the pieces afterwards. And we don't mind picking up the pieces, but we care about them. We care about them going out the next day and doing the same thing again. And it's like, but why are they the right people? Why am I not?
You can't fix people. That's the problem. So the problem happens, I think, a lot is when people are a younger age and they mature a little bit faster than their peer groups do, right? So then you have women who, okay, you get your life together, you think you've got everything figured out, and these women are just trying to figure out themselves. They don't know who they want or what they want. When you talk to women, they realize when they get a little bit older that the type of guy they're really attracted to are the guys who have it all together. But at that time, they're still working out through issues that they had growing up and that they were put through. And, you know, a lot of them were somewhat abused at some point. And so now they're having to deal with that in their lives. And they end up with some have daddy issues, some have other issues. And so they're working through all of that and they're attracted to the wrong guys, as it were, for them, but they figure it out eventually.
Yeah.
So it's not a case of they finally coming around and realize you're the good guy. It's just they finally work themselves through a point where they realize that they're attracted to the kind of guy that you were the whole time. Hmm. You know, so that doesn't really the stories, the movies are like, oh, you know, you stick around long enough and they'll figure it out. And that's not how it should work. If you're not getting the response from the girl that you're liking, you should move on to someone else immediately. Right. You know, find the person who is ready to, you know, be attracted to that sort of thing. And right. then don't keep giving of yourself to someone who isn't there to really appreciate it. They're not mentally there yet.
Yeah. All right. So the chat has weighed in on some of this. Wicked Kender says, Jackie isn't held very high regard in China. Apparently, he's known as kind of a sleazy ladies' man, possibly complete BS. I read on the internet. With that, Jackie Chan, to some people in the martial arts community, as people who watch the movie in that community, that he is held regard, but you are correct. He is seen as a, you know, womanizing, you know, like sleazeball like that. Yes. Wicked Kender also said, we live in the best of times. It hasn't been that long ago that public execution social event. Vincent Cooper chimes in. People use the title nice guys as a mask to wear or a game to play to get sex. It makes it harder for people who aren't using it as a facade. Wicked Kender responds, everyone thinks that they are the nice guy. Nobody thinks that they are the bad guy. And Vincent Cooper, don't fall for the skunk cost fallacy. I don't know what the skunk cost fallacy is.
Does sunk. Know? Sunk.
Sunk. Why? I said skunk. Oh, sorry.
Oh my God, Harry.
Now Escalja's back. Now Escalja wants to talk.
Yeah, well, I had to field a phone call from my father, which if you knew my weekend, I wouldn't be skipping a phone call from my father. So, no, and I think one of the big issues with the entire... I have no idea about the incels. The incels, to me, like, reek of a level of desperation. They're trying to create a social movement about I don't want to touch that, but the entire friend zone discussion has always kind of irritated me, because there are absolutely an element on both sides of the gender split that use the promise of a possibility of something more to lead somebody on, because it, you know, it's just something that they get some sort of value out of, whether it be gifts or just the attention.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, the other thing too is when I was, you know, kind of grown up and trying to figure my things out, I didn't realize how much of a hero complex I had, where I would try to find a broken girl and fix her, right? So somebody who was just having all kinds of issues from stuff that happened to them when they were, you know, 10, 11, 14, you know, that sort of thing, run away from home. You know, I would try to find and show them that, hey, you know, life could be better. Here's the way that you should do things. This is, you know, save them from that life that they were choosing. Right. And it took me a few years to realize that I was doing that and I was completely wrong to do that. Like, you know,
yeah,
you try to help people, obviously, if you want to help them, but they're not ready for it. It doesn't matter.
Being a victim is not a virtue, I guess.
Right. And I was just like, instead of finding someone who was healthy, who would, you know, want to be with someone else who was healthy, because I realized at that point I wasn't healthy. I needed to get myself figured out. So after my first marriage fell apart, and then I dated someone who I had known in high school, and it turned out into a kind of a mess. It was really bad. I realized I needed to look at me and figure myself out. So I didn't date anybody seriously for 10 years. I went through a lot of self-diagnosis and figuring things out for me. Now, I didn't say I didn't have fun in those 10 years, but I didn't get into a serious relationship again until I was ready. And then when I did, I met my wife, and then we ended up getting married. And we've been together for, this year will be 30 years.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, the 20 years. Yeah. Sorry, I'm sorry, 20 years. I'm not that old.
It's all right. You know what? I made it to 5 before my divorce, so that's impressive. The I guess the reason, and I'm not trying to normalize being an incel at all. One is, I feel like, Paul, what you said about the incel movement is true. There's like a group of guys that like are like, let's get together and like be awful. And that's awful. I think for me, I know I was not the only one that I guess was like an incel that nobody wanted to date, but was also not like trying to guilt people into one night stand or have sex or get nudes. Like, and so it sucks because then when you're like, oh yeah, I'm trying to date, but not successfully, the first thing you hear from people, you know, when you're like, yeah, I'm a nice guy, but it's not working out well right now. You disgusting pervert, you aggressive alpha wannabe. What? And you're just like, whoa, what did I do? Like, what did I just say? Like, apparently I've said some trigger because I was just trying to talk about my experiences and now everybody hates me. And now Reinhold, what you said is absolutely on target. I should not have been targeting the women I was targeting. Right. Like these women that I would give my heart to were not worthy of my heart. They did not value, I guess I shouldn't say worthy. They did not value what I brought to the table. They value what they call the dark triad, right? Those sexy, mysterious, whatever guys. And I needed to give them time or whatever to either figure it out or heck, not figure it out. If they want to date somebody in a dark triad, that's fine. You know,
well, it's something I tried to explain to people a long time ago is that when you are in love with someone and they're not loving you back, you're not in love with them. You're an infatuation state.
Yes.
You're having feelings that feel like love to you, but true love is going to be reciprocated and evenly given back and forth. Anything other than that is something else. And people will get caught up and hung up on that word that I'm in love with this person. And they convince themselves to go through a lot more than they should go through. When if they would just realize that it's a different thing and they need to see that, then they would be a lot easier, a lot more motivated to walk away from it and find someone else.
But how do you control it?
Well, words have power. When you tell yourself that this isn't love, that I am not in love with this person, I'm just infatuated with the idea of being with them.
Mm-hmm. I've said those words to myself, crying in a shower many times.
Right, but you have you can gain power over them at that point and say, no, I'm not going to let them beat me. You know, and that's how I always saw it as, and that's how I got past that point where I would just say, I'm not going to let them do this to me anymore. Yeah, I know they're not outwardly trying to hurt me, but I'm not going to let their indifference to me ruin me anymore. Or have control over me anymore. I control me. Nobody else, nothing else, only me. And then I'm not going to let the bastards win. And that phrase, not going to let the bastards win, has helped me through a lot of things that I had to work through my life because of I grew up with bullying issues and all kinds of things. And I gained power over all of it by realizing that the only person I can control is me. And letting other people have control over me is wrong. And I have to give myself the control. And how I respond to things is all on me.
I've said the exact same things to myself to get myself over different things. The other thing I also say with a lot of young men, which a lot of them won't. A lot of people will brush this aside, but they have to understand that just like... females also have, you know, you have hormone imbalances. You will have too much testosterone at some times, and you will, you know, it's not that you're loving, it's just that your hormones are wanting something that this person is putting off, and that's what you really want. That's it.
I was dying for consistent companionship. Yeah. I mean, it's sad to call myself incel because that implies that you're going after sex. I wasn't going after sex. I wanted a relationship with somebody. I wanted somebody to love me.
And that's why, and one of the different things would also affect like men is that the lack of human touch a lot of different times. So a lot of ways that men get human touch interaction is by being in a relationship, because men for some reason don't like touching other men. They have issues with it. Like, I have no issue, like, if men hug me, I don't care. And I get issues like when I, you know, when some guy's like, hey, is it okay? I'm like, it's perfectly fine. You can touch me. It's okay. We're friends. We can touch each other. You know, so that's a lot of guys who feel like they're depressed. They just can't get this woman. They chase this person. I tell them, like, you know what would really help you out? How about some nice, gentle exercise? Pick a Brazilian jiu-jitsu class. The main reason for the Brazilian jiu-jitsu class and why you see a lot of BJ gets kind of happy is because they get a lot of touching. Granted, it's all male touching, but it's human touch. And that human touch will help spark endorphins for you and get that need that you get an exercise. You get your human touch out there. So when you're ready to be out there in the space, when you're ready to try to court or get a partner, your emotional need of physical touch has already been made, so now you're just trying to make it an emotional. Hope that made any sense.
No, absolutely.
That's to me as a martial artist.
No, I think that men need some kind of revolution about the role of physical touch. Mm-hmm. You know, outside of just how it relates to women, also how it relates to other men, also how it relates to yourself and one another and everything. It's one of those that I did not understand for a long time. And when I was going through a really hard time and going through my depression and just all the difficulty there, to have a guy, and I was lucky because I didn't know I needed it, but who would, a guy friend from church who would take me out to lunch, who would talk with me, who would hug me, you know, shake my hand. I wasn't aware of all the healing that was going on during that time because I didn't know it was what I needed. But I remember that I couldn't wait for the day. And it's really sad because I have many friends. In fact, I'm closer with than that guy from church, many, but he is the guy that I have like the most physical contact with. And I mean, as a manager of a restaurant, I've seen women cry in front of me before. I just stand there and watch. I don't even know what to do. Like, I mean, I'm like, is now an appropriate time for a hug? I don't know the role of it. You know, there's no natural, there's no nature to everything within my bones says, don't touch this person no matter what, you know? And that's because I've been conditioned that way. That's certainly not nature, you know, that's broken. And so something inside of me is very broken from my nature. My nature's not violent. I think some people do have like an aggressively sexual violent nature, and that might need to be fixed. But for me, my nature has been what's been destroyed.
And because you'll see, especially like, you know, someone at work, especially at our jobs, you get dehumanized. This has gone off the rails. We are in a totally different country. But anyways, especially at work, you see someone who is crying and needs physical touch to be composed, but you're like, I can't touch this person. Mm-hmm. Can't do anything. I'm, you know, especially if you're like in a position of management or director level, you just have to go like, oh, this is happening. Walk away and get somebody else. Can't do anything. Yeah. And it beats me up inside because I can't do anything. I just have to, I'm watching it. I'm watching someone cry who needs a, just a human, you know, they need someone to be human. And it's like, well, I'm paying her to be a robot. I'm sorry. Let me go get someone that can be a human to you. But you end up having to get someone from HR and walk them over and okay. And you feel like you feel awful, but you know, but deep down inside is like I would have consulted this person, but I can't.
It's a tough balance in the role because you don't want to cheapen somebody saying that they love each other. Right. You know, I don't want to make it cheap to say I love you and use that too much. But at the same time, I love my two brothers that I was raised with. I love them more than anybody I have like ever loved ever. And I don't think I've ever been able to straight up say, hey, Bucky, I love you. Hey, Woody, I love you.
There's a, there's a hentai for that.
Hey, we got somebody else on the call.
We sure do. Yes. We got Rencia. Hi, Rencia.
What's up? Made some hamburgers, made some taco sticks. What's
taco sticks?
We're just talking about feelings and how dumb they are.
Yeah, it's well, I honestly, like, you're right. You don't want to cheapen the word love, but it'd be great if guys would say that to each other or hug or saw more guys hug each other. Like, hey, bro, I love you. It's okay. It's fine. Okay.
Well, there's a difference between trying to make it not cheap, but also not making it extinct. I mean, right now, that is extinct from my world with other guys, is telling them that I love them.
Yeah.
And telling them how much they mean to me. That's gone.
Yeah, and this is something that's happened recently, like the last 100 years inside of like male culture, male society. You can go back to tons of different photos of men, you know, basically cuddling with each other back in the early 900s. You know, you can see them arm in arm being completely close with each other, and that just kind of has died out in male culture.
Yeah. It's sad. Part of it is... I wonder if part of it is, and part of it I understand. I think when I took psychology, I understood that there's a nature within men to compete with one another. I'm not trying to offer you comfort. I realized when I took the class, and it was just a 101 class, but you know how when everybody, when they take Psych 101, like pretends they understand everything about the universe. Mm-hmm. And I probably have had a little bit of that feeling after I took it too. But I just realized about myself how much I would try to compete with other men, as opposed to say, man, that is so awesome that you did that. When some guy's like, oh, I'm so sick right now. Instead of me being like, dude, that stinks. Like, does it hurt? You know, instead of being like, oh, 2 weeks ago, I got even sicker than that. Like I don't know why it's this natural, like one-upsmanship, mm-hmm. but instead of encouraging them, my brain says compete with them. You know, something's messed up on the inside there. I know. And I think men need a revolution in masculinity and understanding like what it is, because it's not masculine to compete over nothing. That's empty headedness. If anything, that's emotional foolishness, you know, but my brain can't tell the difference, you know, it's brave to tell somebody that you love them. It's rather emotional to mm-hmm. overthink it. I mean, I mean, almost feminine to overthink it and say, I'm not going to say it, even though that's how I really feel. Right. That's what we accuse girls of doing all the time. But I do that all the time. I do that with guys, you know, and so it's just something that I feel like we need to, I want somebody smarter than me to do it, because like my experience is Psych 101. I need the Psych 401s to start writing books, and I'm sure they have, and I just haven't gotten around to reading them, but you know, I'm sure Sarah's going to listen to this episode and give me 8 books, but you know, things to tell me, you know, about how to man better, I guess.
Freshman philosopher.
Well, I've been reading a book. It's called the Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck. And I would recommend that book.
Okay.
Right. The Subtle Art of Not Giving an F. Yeah. I think that's on our banned Utah list. I'm not sure if I can even get that here.
Oh, check Audible.
All right. So back to the chat. I just Wicked Hendergut. I just recently had to offer guidance to my teen daughter. She split with her boyfriend because it wasn't fair to him that she didn't feel as he did. She didn't feel as well. It was tough as a dad. Wow, that's going to be rough. Not looking forward to that. We can kind of say, great, Harry. I went through a tough time when I've never touched anyone. It does drive you crazy. Vincent Cooper goes, males don't get enough interaction with others. I was pretty lucky that I had friends that were okay with physical contact. I would hug my male friends in high school because we did care. Some people just need to be held to feel better. I was a manager at a fast food place, and I had to comfort people who needed it. I couldn't help but care. I would have probably gotten in trouble, but I found people who are more important than the shitty job. It comes with the stigma of being gay, unfortunately. So many people have such a fragile sense of that someone questioning their sexuality is too much for them to handle. Low-key wall, weekly mission, hug a male friend. If you want to, yeah.
I'm good with that.
Put some love out there.
Tell the people who mean that much to you in your life, if you feel that you love them, tell them that you love them.
Yeah.
Let them know.
Yeah. Let them know. You know, hug somebody. Give somebody a hug. Doesn't have to be a male. Just, you know, you see someone that needs a hug and you're a friend, give them a hug. Maybe they need a hug. Ask them if they want a hug. You know, it has happened. Hey, it's happened at Liberty and Jill at the Walnut meeting. Okay, we would sit there on a set. I would have been there on several different Fridays, and I have sweat like crap. And one of the guys come up and goes, "Do you need a hug?" I'm like, "Yes, I need a hug." You know, and I get up and I'm sitting there hug. You know, and you know, and you're sitting there in a room full of mostly guys drinking beer, and they watch another guy get up and give another guy a hug, and no one cared. Yeah, give me a hug. I want a hug. That was sad. I just read some sad news. Can I have a hug? You know. So yeah, give people a hug.
We talk about me crying during dog food commercials. I mean, I'm tearing up even thinking what I would say to the males in my life that mean a lot to me. I can't even, like, I wouldn't be able to do it in front of them. Maybe I can write them a letter. I would have a tough time. Be hard. That'd be hard.
Yeah. Well, life is hard.
I say get over that, man. Just realize that what you're going to say to them might mean as much to them as what it means to you. And you're just returning what you're getting from them back to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I probably do. Oh man. Yeah. That'd be hard. That's a tough challenge. That's a worthy challenge, but that's hard, man. That's hard.
Oh, wow.
Well, here's what happens, though, I'm going to tell you right now. You get to be my age, and you realize that the people who mean that much to you may not be around another year because of the situations that we're in. Mm-hmm. You learn you say it when you can, because there's going to be a time where you can't. That choice will be taken from you, and you won't like that at all.
Yep. Ouch. Good point. Good point.
Yeah,
that is a good point.
No, I mean, hourglass isn't on my side. I know that. I don't know. I guess it's that dumb-headed part of me, just hoping that I'll get a few extra grains. You know.
Well, and if you do, I'm going to steal them and put them in mine. Plan on making it to at least 1,200. At least the very minimum 1,200.
What, years old?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. I'm gonna.
Are you talking about? Is this because of technology or this is the keto diet?
I don't know. Either way, I just want to make sure Methuselah's record is shattered. I just want to
They say that you can't live forever, and I'm like, well, just because somebody hasn't proven that you can yet doesn't mean that you can't.
No, I'm going to live forever and not pay taxes. And then for my final trick, I will divide by zero.
The universe will then fold in on itself and the Big Bang will start over again.
Gee, thanks, Harry.
You're welcome. Welcome. Now I'm watching a video of a boat being tugged underneath a bridge very, very closely. But that's besides the point. Anyway, yeah, free hugs. Don't be afraid to show you care no matter what. These are things from the chat from Toe Boater RS and Vincent Cooper. So,
can I get a hug?
You sure can, Renzia. You can have a hug.
So, Harry, did we dispel the rumor that we're just a bunch of sissy men, low testosterone? Alphas over here. I mean, I think we've done a good job of dispelling that rumor, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, anyone, like, there's a lot of people, for some reason, I do a lot of things, a lot of guys, it's like, well, that's not very manly. I'm like, all right, can you take apart a motor and put it back together? No, that's very manly, but I can. You know, I can build a wall. I can bricklay. You know, I know how to use a backhoe. I know how to do all this stuff, you know. To a lot of people on the outside, I'm pretty freaking manly. But I I enjoy going to get my getting manicures, pedicures, and I enjoy getting a facial. I actually got a facial last weekend, so get over yourselves.
Yeah, it's just, not you know, with this really warped sense of what being a man means, and I think being a man right. means being secure in who you are enough that you can be everything that you are and not try to hide away any part of it. And that means your emotions. And I'm sorry, but men have emotions. If you don't have any emotions, then you're a sociopath. You need help.
Yep. Oh, yeah. And I had to get a facial this week because at work, I was up on top of all the disgustingness, which is the ceiling at work. And it was just awful, disgusting. It was just lint and like ink. It was gross. And the only thing I wanted, I figured that would get that out of me, is steam. Steam my skin, get it out. Wicked Kendo goes, hey, I got that high tea thanks to Alex Jones. I'm, you know, super super high tea, you know, my tea's off the roof. My tea's so high Umbrella Corporation chases me around.
I got it, thanks.
Yeah. Just Captain America. I think I got that one.
I'm
that
so one confident in my masculinity that I can put a chair together and it's put together half-assed and I still have a second go. Yeah, yeah.
I will say that is Rencia put a chair together, and all three of them have fallen apart and had to be repaired.
There was time they can go.
Yeah, sure they were. Anyways, that being said, I want to play. All right, before we're going to get ready to wrap up, I want to play this video. I wanted to play this video. I'm just going to play this quick 4-minute video. Okay. Because I thought it was very impressive, and then we'll stop it, and we'll go to do a little wrap up this episode of Low Key. Well, okay, guys? Video I'm playing from Mox News. You know, sheriffs in multiple states refusing to enforce unconstitutional gun laws. Pretty cool video. I thought it was, anyways. You know, if you're, like, my kind of weird. Okay. You know? So, sit back, relax. Oh, hit the wrong full screen button. Yes, it's from Fox. Yes, it's Fox News. But please bear with me. Are you guys ready? Cool. Playing it now.
All right, defiant U.S. sheriffs in at least 4 states taking a page from liberals on immigration, pushing gun sanctuaries in response to strict new state gun laws and refusing to enforce them. Sheriff Tony Mace is president of the New Mexico's Sheriff's Association. He joins us right now from Reno. Sheriff, good morning to you.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing okay. So there are 4 gun sanctuary states out there, Washington in the west, Oregon, New Mexico, and Illinois, as you can see right there, to the east of the Mississippi River.
Which is a pretty interesting take. It's the idea that these sheriffs are doing the same things like for immigration, making like sanctuary cities of just like protecting people from these unjust laws and going like, haha, here we'll have this pocket of freedom. That's why, another reason I found this interesting.
Why is it you feel you are obligated to say to the state legislature, you've passed some rules, but I cannot enforce them?
Well, you know, we swore, as sheriffs, we swore an oath to defend and support the Constitution and protect our citizens. And, you know, we want to protect their Second Amendment rights. We want to preserve those rights within our respective communities across the state. Mm-hmm. And with some of these pieces of legislation, we've not just in violation of the Second Amendment, the Fourth Amendment, and the Fifth Amendment. And we figured, you know, there's these sanctuary status or preservation status will help us protect our constituents' individual rights within our communities.
Which is one thing that is, but to me, has always been important about the Second Amendment is that if you could, it's the one that's easiest to attack. And if you can attack that one, then the other ones fall by dominoes as you just see this guy starts laying out.
I understand. You feel that, for instance, the background check law would impose regulations on hunting or competitive shooters every time they share guns, right?
That is correct.
What else?
So that particular piece of legislation, the universal background check, will impact our shooting sports, our youth shooting sports. It'll impact the concealed carry classes that instructors teach across the state, because a transfer is a transfer. And in New Mexico, we don't have the mechanism in place to be able to follow those background checks. Even if they're purchased from a federal firearms licensed dealer, under the 1984 Firearms Protection Act, that paperwork's destroyed after 30 days. So as a state law enforcement, we don't have any way to track that, track those transfers.
So he's basically talking about how, like, this new law that's supposed to track transfers. So, like, every time you transfer a gun to another individual, that you are to get a new background check as you move it to individual. It'd be the exact same thing of you take a car and you have to go fill out a, you know, every time you let somebody borrow your car, they're basically taking the car. They need paperwork for it. And the simple fact that the law is toothless because they don't really have a record of someone owning another gun, so they really... It's too hard to enforce because, like I said, after 30 days, they destroy all paperwork about the transaction of that gun. So basically, it's just a hop and a skip until, you know, you have to carry a database to enforce this law.
So you're not going to be devoting resources to do that because you feel it's unjust. What's the reaction been so far to the fact that you are a Second Amendment sanctuary?
You know, I've had overwhelming support from my citizens within my county. We've had overwhelming support from the majority of the citizens across the state of New Mexico. I've had sheriffs from Nevada reach out and speak with us. We're just hoping that you know, we can help keep this momentum going.
Your governor out in New Mexico this past week said that this is hyperbole, falsehoods, and fear-mongering. What do you say about that?
You know, that's absolutely false. We are sheriffs, duly elected by the people in our respected communities, and we're trying to carry the voice of those people to Santa Fe. Not only that, you know, between our organization, we have...
And that's another thing with when it comes to sheriffs, unlike police, they don't have their job for life. So they're just this priest captain. Sheriffs, they're elected. They actually have election seasons to go through to get different things to be able to for them to work on things.
Hundreds of years of law enforcement experience. We're the office of the sheriff. We're the one that's going to be responsible for a lot of these pieces of legislation should they be enacted law. And, you know, before it becomes law, we should be brought to the table and look at these pieces of legislation, see what's going to work, see what's not going to work, see what's going to actually impact the criminal element within New Mexico.
And that's the other thing that you get, that they're... They're on the floor. They understand that. All right. So it is one of those pieces that, how can I put it? It's when it comes to all this, it's to me, it's main reason why, especially here in like they did in Indianapolis, getting diminishing the power of the sheriff, only having them over the prison and making IMPD and controlling everything. It's because the police chiefs was an election, you know, it's massive election appeal. You could go out there and announce that. I think I heard Reinhold wrestling. Reinhold? Was that you? Reinhold?
No, it was not me.
Oh, okay. Dude, was someone else that wanted to? Okay. All right. So, and that's why I thought it was very interesting on this whole take of the, you know, creating the sanctuary, like basically the same thing that would take. So it's the same idea that you can use the 10th Amendment to stop unjust laws coming in from the federal government. You watch these sheriffs, just like, you know what? You can make your laws anything you want inside the major metropolitan areas, but here in the rural communities, we won't enforce that, which you see a lot of it happening, especially in the rural communities, that the major cities will try to enact these laws and push that out there and outwards the same way, like in Illinois. They get really annoyed because Chicago controls a lot of different controls majority of Pollock is happening in there. And while they don't want guns up there, but in rural Illinois, they do want guns. Here in the chat, we've got Steaming Your Skin. I got called Michael Jackson by Toboter, and he said the F word and the NRA. Toboter also like to say, I would like to see states say a gun built in states say a gun built in our state and sold in our state cannot be subject to federal law.
Actually, generally, in order for the U.S. district attorneys to charge a crime, they will go through the effort of proving that a gun moved through federal interstate commerce.
because it was built in a different state, been moved or transferred or sold here originally, and they'll try to figure that out. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, if it is manufactured, say, outside of the state of Indiana, they do have a system in place through the ATFE. They keep a registry of where guns are manufactured and work with the manufacturers to prove that the gun moved through interstate commerce.
So it's a database that they can hold on just so they can tack on more crimes.
Or not even necessarily more crimes, but you know, prove that there is a federal aspect to the crime that is being charged.
Here's the thing. When it's originally sold, it's going to be sold interstate commerce more than likely. But if you're buying it from like a third party person, it's like, say, I got in a back alley, it's not going through interstate commerce. The original transaction was interstate commerce, but you buying the gun from a back alley dealer is still interstate commerce.
Right, but they still have justification because it moved through interstate commerce to begin with.
But that only works from the first transaction. That's how you'd have to argue.
Nope. That is not how they justify it.
Well, they justify anything because, like, they're going to sit there and say, well, it's originally was that, like, 10 years ago it was manufactured here, but it's been traded in state for, like, the last 6 years. The reason, like, they're not going to see it like that because that's a literal interpretation of the law. Like, literally, it has to be sold at this moment across the state line to basically view it. And that's when you get into how the judges are going to rule. Are they a strict constructionist or a loose constructionist? Are they going to really just say, okay, was it really sold over state law this time? And look at it case by case, which is harder to find a judge to do that. Can some state judge or federal judge say, like, well, okay, we did buy it 10 years ago from the state of New York, and now it's in the state of Illinois, but the last 9-10 transactions were all done in state. So it's not really interstate commerce at this period, point in time in this period. You'd have to find a judge to basically agree with that argumentation.
Well, the thing is, they're going to look at it as interstate commerce regardless, because there was that fact that it was manufactured, say, in New Jersey and moved to New York. There isn't a statute, just like with a felony conviction barring you from owning firearms, there isn't a time period at which it stops being a felony or at which it stops being part of interstate commerce.
Yeah, and then, even then, if I want to take it even more literally, right, I'm going to say, okay, well, it's interstate commerce. Commerce involves that there's some monetary transaction that happens between the guns, right? So if I'm a New York gun dealer and I'm selling guns, you know, I'm selling it for cash profit, then it's an interstate commerce issue. If I'm selling a burrito and tacking on a free gun with it, the gun wasn't part of the commerce. There's no money gained off. There's money gained off the burrito. It's a $500 burrito, but the gun was just given away as a giveaway. It's not, like, pertaining to any sort of commerce. It's just a benefit package to buying the burrito.
There's correct interpretation, and then there's, I mean, essentially what Paul is saying is how it works, at least in my county and state as well, mostly because they have an incentive. I think this ties it back into the video, which I actually have a lot of thoughts on. I loved it, Harry. There's in most districts, the incentive is to bust people, right? Mm-hmm. When we measure the success of somebody, when we say, well, should we reelect this sheriff?
Correct.
Or this DA? Well, what was their conviction rate? What laws did they punish? How hard were they on crime? How hard, you know?
Right.
And I think it's an interesting switch. I hope videos like this catch fire, because I think it's a way for us to judge the quality of our sheriffs differently mm-hmm. than how many people they threw in prison. I mean, you know, we got Kamala Harris, who essentially has built her whole reputation on being tough on crime and really hard on the drug war, you know, and she was one of the most successful, probably the most successful, prosecutor of all time, at least in San Francisco, as far as the war on drugs goes. But she was judged purely based on this: how many people did you throw in the slammer for drugs? Good job throwing that many people in there. Whereas if the county's values say, I don't care about that. Like, how many dangerous people did you arrest? How many rapists did you convict? How many rape kits did you process? We sit decades on rape kits in Chicago. You know, you will wait over 10 years to get your rape kit process in a big city, mm-hmm. while there is a cop on the street that's pulling people over. If we get the county to understand priorities better, mm-hmm. they can shift that around. And suddenly we say, I'm no longer judging my sheriff based on how many convictions he gets on drugs. I don't care if they were doing it or not. Right. I love the fact that he's all over his rape kit or these rape kits, these right. real crimes, these burglaries. Wouldn't you guys love it if your car got broken into and they actually like brought somebody with some freaking dust for fingerprints or something? Like, I mean, my goodness, they've got a million people out there handing out these tickets all over the place for cars that are going too fast on a street where it's dangerous to go slow, for goodness sake. But they can't get everybody to afford a little $3 thing that I can pick up at Walmart to dust and pick up some fingerprints and really just try to match them on their computer. And I think that that's because what you're saying, I agree with what you're saying in that this is how it should work. This is how the law is interpreted to work. But right now they're incentivized to make it not work that way. And the justice system is tied to that DA. I mean, there's no way around it. The judge works there. And right. so they understand that they're like, okay, well, but we interpret it this way, the way that Paul said, more often than not. And I think that we just need to catch on and have them say, it's almost like jury nullification, except sheriff nullification. I'm no longer pursuing these crimes, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think the video is fascinating here. I hope that video becomes more popular and that people want that of sheriffs in their community. Cause I know I do.
And, you know, I would even venture to say, I'd love to see the sheriffs going hard at these people that are breaking their oaths to the Constitution and, you know, actually having some level of law enforcement take their oath seriously and hold others to that oath that they swore.
All right, before we go on, I just got to say this, Kamala Harris, fuck her because of what she did for Pasta and Sesta, but keep moving.
So. Well, like, the thing with the sheriff nullifying laws is, like, you can only nullify so many laws, you're like, I'm not going to enforce it before, like, the governor can actually step in and remove a sheriff from office eventually if they just not enforce the law that they want to say. But, like, if I'm a sheriff and I'm not going to enforce state law, I'd be like, I'm not going to enforce the state law the legislature signed off on, the governor can actually petition to have me removed as sheriff and basically have another reelection for someone else. That's why a lot of sheriffs don't do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and even beyond that, they will, I mean, I don't know if you guys know this, if you don't hand out X amount of tickets or do what the federal government wants, the mm-hmm. federal government gives the states a ton of money to fix their road, you know, to do roads. And then the majority of what they get from roads isn't even, it's on the federal level. It's not even from in the state. And they just won't give them that money unless they follow certain rules and guidelines.
Well, even then it's a pointless thing too, because I have a county sheriff, right? My county sheriff can say, I'm not going to enforce these laws. But the way Indiana, for example, is set up is police have jurisdiction statewide. So my town police has jurisdiction all the way from here to like the border of Michigan. So even if my sheriff says, oh, we're not going to enforce the law, my city policemen, my people in my city, my township can enforce the law regardless. So it makes the point of the sheriff like totally moot. You can just get city police to enforce it.
See, my I guess in my area it's a little different. The sheriff actually dispatches like and sets routes for the police and assignments, so it's a little bit different. But I mean, I agree. I think the thing is the federal government does have this stick over the states, and the states have this stick over the counties. Like you said, the governor can kick out a sheriff. The federal government can remove a sheriff. On top of that, I think even more than removal, it's financial incentive. They won't get aid. They won't get X of dollars of financial aid. Sometimes it's not even linked. They won't get education aid if, you know, or scholarship considerations if they don't, you know, agree to these rules or these speed limits or, you know, crazy things like that. And so, or when we talked about the private police force, we had that whole wall when Spangle got his tires stolen. Mm-hmm. The thing about the private police forces is they did stop doing drug raids. Unless the feds came and were like, hey, guess what? We know these guys do drugs and we coordinate that through the county. So guess what? You're doing a drug raid now. So they absolutely have the final say in it. It's still something that I think, and that's why I say it needs to be popular, because Correct. It needs to be something that is looked at negatively. If a sheriff were to get removed, mm-hmm. for these reasons, it would need to be viewed negatively.
Yes. Yeah. Also, definitely needs to be, you know, in that light. All right. So, calling it. I'm calling it. I'm sorry. I got to get up early in the morning. I have a plane ride to Dallas tomorrow. So, this one isn't getting long in the tooth. I saw what you're trying to do, Brian Holt. I saw that. That ain't happening. Okay.
Break the record.
No. Not this time. Okay. Maybe one day. But today is not that day. So, let's all wrap up. Let's start with Hody.
Man. Oh, it's hard that we're leaving it so quickly after you introduced that interesting video. But
sure was.
You know what? I'll just say this. I'll go back and just say, if you're a dude and you're hearing this, I hope you, or a girl, I just hope you have mercy on me. Or a woman, I should say. If you're a man or a woman. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't understand enough about what it means to be a dude, and I really don't think I'm the only one. And I think that we just need to have an understanding about, I think when you repress these people, they get in these groups that accept them of incels. Now, I never did it because I thankfully was like accepted by my family and my brothers and my mom and my dad. Mm-hmm. I was lonely for companionship, but I still had at least a family to go to. I think when we just straight up ostracize them, they create these groups of belonging, and that's where you get these toxic atmospheres, especially in the online community. And it's way bad, and it's awful. I called it out on a big Facebook post recently, and I think it's sickening. But at the same time, I don't pretend like it happens just because they're all mentally insane. They're looking for some type of companionship. They can't find it with women, so they find it with each other. And unfortunately, many of them are sick in the head. And it's easy to say, all the women are stupid and you're the one that's normal. And then they come to this group all together and say, yeah, all the women are stupid and we're the ones that are cool. Yeah. And so I just think if you know somebody who's maybe a little bit like that or bordering like that, mm-hmm. instead of kicking them to the curb, which is maybe what they deserve, try giving them more than what they deserve. Maybe just give them a little mercy, give them a little understanding, give them a shoulder, give them a hug if they want one, and maybe show them that there's like some real companionship to be found out there. They just have to be patient and wait for it. You know, for me, I think Reinhold was right on both parts. I was pursuing the wrong women and I had infatuations. But that's the human experience. I mean, that's I don't make believe that that happened, that I'm the only one that's happened. And so I think it's important that we normalize that and make people understand what it is. And I think the more we normalize that, the more we can start talking about these deep feelings that even I have a tough time talking about, because it'd be nice that if by this age, it was not a tough thing to talk about. And I can just be like, hey, I love you guys, or I love you, man, or, you know, just and say it with some meaning. In a way that's impactful, as opposed to awkward. And I mean, it'd be awkward to say, and I'd be scared to say it. So I just think it's a culture war. If you're debating between having a war against politics or a war against culture, stick to the war on culture. That's all I got.
Very interesting. Very interesting. All right. What do you got, Rencia?
All I can say is, I think the sheriff's like doing these things are pointless. I think it's kind of like grandstanding because, like I said, it's the way systems are set up is beyond a check and balance. It's sheriff says we're not going to enforce this gun law. That doesn't mean like every single city police officer is not going to enforce it. Sheriff can sit there and say, "Well, I'm not going to enforce it. My deputies," but that doesn't mean his deputy is not going to go out in the street and enforce it. I mean, yeah, you can command them not to, but this is going to happen. And it's just one of those things where. You just have to like eliminate just the hierarchies of police force in here. Like I said, here in Indiana, like my city police can enforce the law all the way down to by the United States, or not the United States, but Indianapolis Airport, and pretty much throughout the state. So that's a lot of policing powers, especially like each individual officer, because once you're sworn in, you can enforce the law anywhere at any given time. So it could be like 3 in the morning, I could be down in Evansville, and I can get, like, you know, enforced by, you know, Lawrence police. And that's just how it's kind of set up here in the state. And a lot of states have that same structure. And they introduce that structure due to, like, people running on high-speed chases where if they cross the state line and they cross the county, police can still pursue them. So even if I cross the state line, I can still be pursued by police due to, like, pacts between states and, like, contracts between states. So, you know, when he does that sort of stuff, he gets on the air and talks about it. It's just kind of grandstanding, just getting, like, some conservatives all riled up. Like, yeah, it's going to happen. But even if he says it, the shit still happens. I guarantee, like, after he said that stuff, I'm not going to enforce it. I guarantee at least 20 guns are picked up within the first 5 minutes, you know, and for whatever reason. So it's still being enforced, even though he says he's not going to. I'm not saying it's, like, hypocrisy. It's just the state is usually so big. There's so many different agencies, so many individual actors. You can't control them all. So things just still kind of happen, you know, under, like, the hood of everybody else. I doubt a sheriff really pays that much attention to it, because usually when you elect a sheriff, he's pretty much just a guy going to, like, a county council arguing for a budget and kind of just maintaining the budget. That's all he really does. That's all a sheriff really does, even though he's a law enforcement official. So, you know, just thinking back on that, it's like it's kind of a pointless thing, and you kind of just degrade a lot of the laws that allow people to allow police forces and allow other things to kind of cross county lines, state lines, or different jurisdictions. That won't happen, though, because that's basically neutering the police.
Yeah. All right. Reinhold?
All right. So all I want to say is a couple things. One is that when you – the only person you have control over is yourself, and the only really control you have is how you react to anything that's happened to you. So that's what you need to be focused on, and – figuring out how you're reacting to outside influences. If somebody does something or says something or offends you in some way, how are you reacting to it? Because you can't really control whether they do or don't do that sort of thing. That's on them to do. But how you take that information and react to it is the key in who you are and what type of person you are. And the other thing is that you cannot expect anybody in the world to love you if you do not love yourself. So the main thing you have to do is focus on finding out whether or not you love yourself. And if you don't, why not? Is it rational? Is it something you need to work on? Is there some things you need to change? Or do you just need to accept yourself as who you are and love you for that? Because if you can't do it, then nobody else, you know, how can you expect anybody else to? And that's really it.
All right. All right. Well, looks like I'll finish it up here. First off, Kamala Harris, F her on FOSTA and SESTA. I really feel like, you know, that it's, you know, that's hurt a lot of different people. And I hope they understand that, you know, that the government did this to them, and that was, you know, the parties of anti-freedom did that to that. And they understand that when they go to vote in November. They vote themselves some more freedom. But that being said, you know, laughing at that, we with the sheriff thing, hey, I just I like the idea of people understanding and actually going whether something actually go from it or not, the conversation that needs to be had, whether something is constitutional or not, and people actually trying to do something, putting butts on the line. Hey, I actually appreciate that. And watching different states try to get away with different things, especially like when New Hampshire used the 10th Amendment to get rid of the stupid federal seatbelt law, which is the only state in the union that you don't have to wear your seatbelt in. Fun times. But the other thing, other thing I'm going to touch on too is the physical touch thing. Yeah, if you have friends and they, you know, and you guys all, it's all consensual and you guys can, it's okay. Hug each other, get in some Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. If you're feeling down and depressed right now, trust me, do some wrestling, some Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, help some people out, get a yoga class, and have the person just, you know, like, and help each other out and touch each other. Trust me, it'll blow your mind, like, that physical, how much physical touch you're just missing, and will help you concentrate and focus and get you through just having interactions and meeting new people. And it's an, I remember, because majority of the physical touch I get is just from my wife. Most guys, you know, I don't get physical touch from most guys. Just the way it is, you know? And that's why sometimes I'm going to say, like, I just crave guy touch, but it's just more of a, you know, this realization is just like, hey, the most physical touch I get is just for my wife. So like sometimes, and that's why I like rolling with people, doing BJJ, just showing people different things, because it's that physical interaction, that touch, the human touch, the personal nature of that, just know, you feel that someone's out there, does so much for me. The other thing, and then the final note I will say, NordVPN, I don't really know about that VPN that too much, and I really don't trust VPN companies that you give all this money to have them, you know, you don't really know if they're not scanning logs or not. You don't even know if they're selling your DNS information. You don't even know if their stuff is good or not. Pretty much crap. Pretty much crap unless you do it yourself. So, anyways, that being said, this is Loki Walking here on this Monday, the 5th of March. So, bye, everybody. Say bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Laters.